This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina. I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And my name is Zach Valenti, your third Bad Ideas host.
And for the second time this week, we are fortunate enough to be joined by writer extraordinaire, podcast creator Maverick. She brought you Red Rhino, is writing for the upcoming College Tapes. It's Megan Fitzmartin.
Hello.
Megan, thank you so much for being on the show again. It's such a pleasure to have you with us again.
Well, thank you. It's such a fun show.
That's what we'd love to hear. That's what we like to hear.
The check is in the mail.
Yes.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Oh, 5 cents of it?
That's right.
Five Canadian cents.
$4.99.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5 cents minus expenses, please.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I forgot to take the tax out of it.
Yeah, we're an independent business.
Listen, I completely understand.
So this is the independent business where we find the worst, most terrible, no good, very bad ideas on the whole of the internet, bring them here, horrify each other with them, and then we give ourselves just 10 minutes. Just 10 minutes to try to turn them into a good story, or at least the beginnings of a good story. And today, the bad idea purveyor du jour is Miss Sarah Shackett.
Oh, yes. Hello.
Oh, no. I don't like that. I don't like anything about that tone of voice.
I love it. I can't wait.
This is fun, guys.
It? Fun for who?
I mean, for me, which is what I care about.
Points for honesty.
But I think this could be fun for y'all. And because I found like actually three really good bad ideas. But this one that I'm going to bring to you comes from our friends at NPR, and we haven't used NPR's idea in a little while. So,
Back in the early days, NPR was like the standby, yeah.
Oh.
So I'm just going to read. Dear listeners, if you would like to read along with this, there will be a link to the article that I'm going to read to these guys in the episode description. But it's really all in the title. She gets calls and texts meant for Elon Musk. Some are pretty weird.
What?
Some.
Oh, is this like... is this like a Seinfeld situation where Elon Musk gives out a random phone number to people that he doesn't want to like?
Well, hold on to that thought for just a second. The article reads, there are a lot of people trying to reach celebrity entrepreneur Elon Musk. Sometimes, though, they get Lindsay Tucker, a 25-year-old skincare consultant. Tucker, who works at a Sephora beauty store in San Jose, California, had never heard of Tesla and SpaceX, the Tesla and SpaceX founder and CEO until a couple years ago when she began fielding a steady stream of calls and text messages intended for him. Quote, I asked my mom, hey, I keep getting these text messages. And I also now started to get phone calls for this guy, Elon Musk. I don't know who this is, Tucker said, and my mom's jaw just dropped. Turns out Tucker's cell phone number used to be registered to Musk on any given day.
Oh, wow.
She receives at least 3 calls or texts intended for Musk, whom she has never met. If the maverick billionaire provokes a scandal, as he is wont to do, her phone blows up with a torrent of messages. Full disclosure, the writer of this article reached out to Musk during one of those controversies when he threatened to sue the California county that is home to Tesla's manufacturing plant over its coronavirus-related restrictions. Instead, I got Tucker. She has accidentally intercepted far more interesting calls than mine, however. One woman volunteered to go to space with SpaceX. another person sent a blueprint to her for a bionic limb.
Yes. Is, oh my God.
Quote, that's number cool. one, really cool, Tucker said, but I have no idea how it's built.
No, Tucker. We learn. We learn this.
A South African businessman asked about buying 1,000 trucks. The Internal Revenue Service called about a complicated tax issue. I assume I had this worst. Up.
That's the worst phone call to get. Oh, boy.
Quote, it was a huge relief they weren't looking for me, end quote.
Yeah.
Former Walt Disney executive John Lasseter texted about the Tesla he bought.
No.
Yeah, you save that phone number.
That's
calling
amazing.
It a magnificent car with 3 exclamation points, which feels very John Lasseter.
Yeah, it is.
Unless it was a fake John Lasseter. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself.
John Lasseter is the person that has John Lasseter's old phone number.
Exactly.
Right.
Recently, Jeff Gold, an Atlanta area inventor who did business with Musk in the 1990s, sent a text about some coronavirus research. He gave me his number a long time ago, Gold said. I went on and tracked the correct number and resent my text. Public records show that Tucker's number was once associated with a condo Musk bought and sold years ago in Palo Alto, California. After Musk got rid of the number, AT&T randomly reassigned it to Tucker. But online, the number took on a life of its own. It was replicated on dozens of listing websites as Musk's current digits. NPR reached out to Musk to see whether he knew about his long-lost number. He replied with a short email. Wow. Musk said, that number is so old. I'm surprised it's still out there somewhere.
There it is.
However, good people...
Job. Period. Musk, that was it. That was like
the
extended...
Done. Wow. That was it.
Cool. Yeah, no, checks out. This is the guy that named his kid Archangel A12 or whatever. Like,
They've changed
like,
the...
You wouldn't think that he'd be known for brevity, though. Like, that's like the longest, most complicated kid's name ever.
This is my favorite sentence, though. When NPR asked Musk whether he gave out that number to people he was trying to dodge, he did not respond.
Boo.
However, people obtained the number is often up to Tucker to convince them that she is not Musk. They say, oh, how do I know you're not Elon? She said. And they suddenly want proof that I'm not him, even though they're obviously talking to a woman on the phone.
What a mind fuck. Oh my God.
This feels like the anti-dox. Like,
it does.
You're dox, but like, it's not you. You're not.
Right.
You don't. No one cares about you.
Quote, whenever I see his name popping up in the news, I'm like, okay, I actually have to learn what he said because chances are someone is going to message me about it or call me about it, Tucker said.
Holy shit.
Even though I find it funny most of the time, it does get irritating sometimes when it's like call after call after call. She intends to keep the number, however, since she's an aspiring actress with a network of contacts who know her by those digits. But she acknowledges her ability to respond to all the Musk calls and texts changes day by day. To those who think Elon Musk is ignoring them, Tucker has a message. I'm sorry. Sometimes I don't respond.
Aww.
So if I'm having a rough day. So if you didn't get a response, it's probably me, not him, she said. Don't feel too let down.
Wow. Oh my God. This is great. This is
so
cool.
Yes, this is what I had for you guys. Accidentally getting Elon Musk's old phone number. I'm going to put 10 minutes on a timer. Tell me a story.
My question is, what would you pull off if everyone that called you or received a call from you thought you were a billionaire?
That's an interesting heisty question.
Mm-hmm. I like
Where were you going to go with this, Gabrielle?
I was going to take this in, like I think that I want to come back to that because I think that like lends itself to more interesting discussion. But I was going to say this is the... set up for a very kind of fun, campy North by Northwest style. Somebody gets a new phone. They get some information. Somebody sort of knows that someone is about to send some information to this important person. They see this person's phone number light up. And then it's kind of like, boom, there it is. That's Elon Musk. That's Roger Thornhill. Let's go. And it then sort of like spirals into this mistaken identity kind of like chase across the country with the person eventually growing into and impersonating this. But number one, North by Northwest already exists. We don't need to make it again, even though it would probably be profitable. if anybody wants to do the 21st century reboot of that movie, right, give me a call. so let us turn our attention back to the question of, you suddenly find yourself impersonating a billionaire accidentally.
I will say, before we leave the thriller zone, it does bring a new shading to the call is coming from inside the house.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting sort of, like, I don't have anything else to pitch on it, but like, there is something that,
right,
I feel like in the new technology age, that's how you pull off the call is coming from inside the
house.
Just
when you thought you'd used every part of the idea, Buffalo. Turns out that there's a new way to skin it. Yeah.
But I agree. Let's see from Zach's perspective, because I do feel like there's a lot to play with this idea, which is fun.
Especially if the person who finds themselves with said billionaire's number was somehow snubbed / has some bone to pick with said billionaire.
Oh, so they're going to build a spite house.
I mean,
hey,
call back to the previous episode.
Spite calls.
Spite phones.
Yeah.
In a very like Ocean's 11-y kind of way.
Hmm.
Where Ocean is basically hitting the casino where his wife is dating the casino guy.
Right.
What I find interesting, though, is that it's, and we can change this up, but as presented, it's a very limited form of identity theft, because it's not like you have his BlackBerry. You only have his number. So you can't kind of access any of his accounts or any of kind of like the other private data. You can only kind of give voice commands to the people that call you.
However, you can also retrieve your password from any account that still registers your number is your number.
Sure.
And this is somebody who in real life can tweet and affect the stock price of their business by however many, I don't understand, zeros in the stock market. But, you know, people.
We're writers. What
you
is
know,
math?
Right. Basically, what like you could like theoretically like screw with somebody's whole world if, you know, you could suddenly tweet as them
because
and do. Yeah.
Yeah, it's information. Like, essentially, you hold the keys to a kingdom, even if that kingdom is fake. You still have a version of access because everyone else believes you have access.
Exactly. That's what I find kind of interesting about this is, you know, I'm very, very down for sort of like the revenge thriller where someone who finds themselves with this number tanks this billionaire's life. But also I would imagine that there's like all sorts of courtiers and information and stuff with that comes with being mistaken for someone with that kind of money and influence. And just like, how does having sort of inside info change this person and how they're going about their everyday life?
Oh, true.
Well, I think let's begin by answering the question of what is their level of animosity towards this billionaire whose phone number they inherit? And also kind of like, what is their willingness to do unscrupulous things? because it sort of sounds like this is a like kind of unbearably wholesome creature that like inherited Elon Musk's number in real life.
Right.
If she's like,
well,
I don't know, like if she's taking
the
time.
Unbearably wholesome creature that like wants to keep the phone number because she wants to be an actress, which I think is also very interesting.
It is.
Like,
but it's not like she's using the Elon Musk angle to get connections. Like, it's just that like she's already got that number out there and doesn't want to lose all those things. Is my reading from the article though.
I see your eyebrow is raised.
I think it's a very kind reading of this person. I think it's a person who hasn't done anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. I think everybody has the capacity. It's which is the and you're not wrong. Like there is maybe something to like, does having this much power turn this person in? Was she planning on being an actress before she had all of this quote unquote access?
Mm-hmm.
did the idea that like all of these people are in somewhat sort of a close-knit range change almost the bearing of her life to be not just, you know, quote unquote shop girl, but like, oh, I could be more than this person that works at Sephora. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with working at Sephora, which I
not
think
at all.
Yeah, I think, and we can sort of take it into like a fully fictionalized, more extreme version of this. I'm sure Miss Lindsay Tucker is perfectly lovely individual.
I'm sure, yes.
But if like that's the story you want to tell of like someone sort of going power mad by proxy, that's a story. There's also sort of more closer to what you were talking about, Zach, where it's just like, let's hack the billionaire.
Right. And
which also
I think
kill the rich.
That's what I'm trying to kind of like suss out of kind of 10 minutes into the movie. What is this person's attitude? Are they kind of in a like, let's hack them and get this stuff and go for a ride? Or is it sort of a like, with great power comes great responsibility that will not slowly corrupt me, I'm sure.
Well, so I'm so glad you said that. And I think that I like the idea of it sort of starting out with like, you know, oh no, my number's inconvenient. Like very close to the story of just like mm-hmm. I am not this person. Fuck you. Prove it. You're not this person. And like, no, seriously.
How do I prove a negative?
Right. And then slowly it becomes like this person has inconvenienced me and like they're inconveniencing the world with their bullshit. And then like it gets to the point where they realize they can start to like access all their stuff. And the next thing you know, they've summoned their like self-driving car and, you know, take it for a joyride and end up in the underground tunnels of, you know, like the whatever company boring underneath the city. And the next thing you know, they're in like the bat cave of this billionaire and realize that they have the opportunity to become a real life superhero. And there's more to this person than just being a horrible human being. And maybe there's, you know, some intrigue under the ground that they get.
So they end up with Bruce Wayne's phone number.
So that's what I'm wondering. Yeah, like how, like, yeah. Is there anything
or,
to that?
Or like, it can turn into some sort of, you know, halfway through those movies that turn into a sci-fi movie, like halfway through, and you're like, I did not see this part coming. Like, there's definitely a way for this person, like, to go to Mars. Because they have traveled this person's space bunker.
So long as it doesn't end up being a simulation in the end, I'm in.
No, yeah. Oh, well, this is not fucking Ender's Game. Absolutely not. No, like there's something to, yeah, like I was a normal person that now has extraordinary access to being extraordinary, not normal. And the powers that like essentially not taking over the person's life, but I like to delve into themes whenever I'm writing, and I know we'll get into that later, but like I like to delve into like what's the moral of the story, what's the story that's being told, and the idea that a person that can like start from essentially nothing that like takes over and realizes that, oh well, you made this, I also have the opportunity to like be this.
Yeah. And so that's how Mary comes to rule Mars.
Right, exactly. And then she becomes the queen of Mars and gets a perfect colony out of it. I think it's great.
Well, that's time. You solved it.
Can I just throw in one more thing?
Please.
I think that clearly the episode, the title of the film needs to be New Phone, Who Me?
I love it.
Oh boy. Well.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. We're out of time, so I mean,
that's it.
There's not going to be anything
better.
We can't
say no.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and not solve anything because we have solved that idea. Hey y'all, breaking into the show for a moment, give you a little breather between ideas, and also to let you know that We have a Patreon. We still do. It's still there. It's still great. There's still wonderful rewards that you can take advantage of by supporting us in making this show and making all the other things that we make. You can head on over to nobadideaspodcast.com/support to check out everything we offer over on Patreon and help support us and keep the show going. Again, that's nobadideaspodcast.com/support. Thank you so much if you're already one of our proud patrons. And if you can't contribute at this time, that's okay. We love you all the same. But Patreon really helps us keep this show going. And so please consider just checking it out. But not right now, because we have an episode to get back to right now.
And we're back from our break where we didn't solve anything. Now to solve everything about writing, creativity, and beyond.
Excellent.
So, Megan, I guess my question is, could you take us back to the beginning of your love affair with writing? I guess I'm just curious, where would you say it all started?
Man, so
we're starting
my
off with
spiel,
the small questions and building,
you know,
up to the
yeah. Clearly, I have always written. I'm sure there's a connection there. I'm with you guys because I find that I've always told stories. In every sort of medium. Like I even to this day, I get people asking me questions like, oh, well, what do you like to write? And I live in LA. And so people are like, do you like writing television? Do you like writing? And I'm like, the answer to all of it is yes. Like, I love writing books and I love writing podcasts and I love writing television. Like, I just like stories. And I've always liked stories. And I've always liked stories because I have always loved stories as it relates to the human condition and like understanding myself, because I have never been very good at understanding emotions specifically. But stories were always really helpful in being like, oh, this person is mad. And that feels similar to how I feel right now. So I must be mad. And that sort of call and response or a trial and error way of understanding emotions was really helpful whenever I was younger. And then I went to school to be a youth pastor, which I'm clearly using that degree. But it was, I mean, I'm really grateful for it because it created within me an even more sense of need to understand stories, because stories for me, what I wanted to go to school for, I wanted to be a youth pastor, to tell people that they are loved. And I was realizing that is in effect what stories were for me. They taught me how to be a person. They taught me how to be a human being. They taught me how to love others and to have empathy. And hindsight's 2020, me being able to look back and be like, ah, yes, I see how everything led to this particular point that I exist in. But it's a lot of strange, weird pieces that bring us here to this moment in time today, and I'm very grateful for all of them.
No, but I think that makes all of the sense in the world, though.
Doesn't sound familiar or relatable in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah,
none of you ever have lived through a similar.
I was not a religion student in college, only because I kind of started a little bit late and didn't end up with enough credits to get the double major. But I took a bunch of religion classes. And I think that like the main thing that I got out of that was just a encapsulation of, man, stories are important. Like stories really, really get under your skin and they make you think things a certain way, which I think is even more important than thinking specific things. Like they kind of define the way that you sort of conceptualize things and that the way that you kind of process things, which is crazy. And it even gets into that thing that you were just saying of sometimes we're having trouble understanding why someone is having a reaction or why someone is struggling with something. And then someone kind of goes, It's like that scene in Titanic where they're standing outside and this happens and you immediately go, got it. Why? Well, why didn't you say that at the beginning? That would have just made
why didn't you say you were feeling Titanic?
Why didn't you say you were feeling Titanic? Exactly.
I'm always feeling James Cameron.
That would have made it all so much clearer. I am not really building up to any particular question here, just kind of a like general sentiment of agreement and recognition.
Well, I have a question sort of building off of that in the sense that like I was thinking about this yesterday. I was sort of living through, this is going to sound incredibly abstract, but I will explain. I was living in a space that I had not existed in for a long time. I was taking care of a kid for a long time, and I haven't done that since. I was a nanny for a long time, and I'm the oldest of five kids. Right. Children were a huge part of my existence for a long time, and so I haven't done that in a while. And it brought back a lot of like similar feelings to being younger and to the stories that that shaped me. And so just sort of basing off of like what you were talking about and the question that I sort of have is, what stories do you feel like what type of stories? So for instance, I was very into procedurals when I was younger because I needed the like, I needed the strategy. Sarah and I earlier were talking about JAG and love JAG because I loved the procedural element of it while also loving the character like connectivity, and realizing that that was so important for where I was in the formative years. So I was curious in like you guys as creators and writers, where in that aspect did you fall? Like what were particular types of stories that were maybe formative or like built off of that?
Oof. Yeah. Good question.
That's a phenomenal question. And I am now just kind of like very quickly slipping through the role.
You hit me
with a
very simple question early. So I'm going to come right back at you.
No, and I'm a little bit stuck too. It's funny. I was talking to a friend earlier today. When I was in college, every summer I worked at a summer camp. And so had to deal with children quite a bit. And so was giving like advice to someone who is babysitting in a few days. And like thinking about how much I remember of that time and like how much of it is actual things that happened and how much of it is like now stories I have about myself at that time.
Yeah.
So this is all just a wonderful, weird confluence stew of events that I am vamping, obviously, to delay answering the question.
Quality vamp.
Thank you. I think I read a lot of fantasy as a kid, but also a lot of history. And I think I found it really reassuring that things happened in the past.
Yeah.
That like there were signs and guideposts and dramas that existed before I did and could, you know, give sort of a waymark towards things that were happening now is my brief answer to that.
Well, it's interesting, too, because I feel like fantasy also feels like it happened in the past, even if it's not our past. It feels sort of there's a similar consistency to both of
and
those.
And it's often like it's this weird post-apocalyptic past where there's the setting of the fantasy and then there's the before times in the fantasy, the sort of world building and the lore, this time that is lost.
Yeah.
So
there is always kind of this like weird antediluvian sort of like older, even more fantastical world.
Exactly. Especially Tolkien-esque fantasy does that because that was his deal.
Right.
So there's a built-in sense of history in those stories that I like and find comforting.
I think for me, the ones that are sort of like coming to mind as I kind of just do a quick scan is a lot of, especially television series. And I kind of do think that like television was the first big medium that really made a like long standing impact on me. A lot of them were that kind of urban fantasy that focuses on like the duality of there is something fantastic, but there's also your regular urban quotidian life. And I'm kind of thinking of everything from like Buffy the Vampire Slayer to Wonderfalls to even like a lot of the anime that we got like back in Latin America, things even like Ranma One Half or Cardcaptor Sakura, they all kind of had that element of, yes, you are finding magic in the world. Yes, you are finding this thing that is bigger than you and greater than you and big and scary and delightful and wonderful, but also do your homework. And you know, like there is a magic in just like that lunch date that you have with your friends. There is a like wonderful thing in like this regular life and sort of in the responsibilities of being a citizen of the world, which now that I sort of think about it is, I think, something that like has really kind of been like ingrained upon me about sort of, you know, like the multiple levels in which life sort of comes at you.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And I would have to plead the audiobook as sort of my formative medium, and largely the Jim Dale audiobook. Surprisingly, not starting with Harry Potter, although quickly ending with Harry Potter at some level. I think he did some of the Greek myths. You know, I used to sort of beg my mom to read until she just like, you know, had other things to do with her time, but reread the same things. So I think she started to tape things herself. And then eventually realized she could outsource that to Jim Dale. I'm not sure if I have as articulate a sort of statement on what the nature of those stories did to my development and my outlook on the world, other than setting me on a path to voice as many hundreds of voices as I could in
any given project. Yeah. Well, but that also makes sense, right? It's a similar... Because I enjoy listening to all of the different voices that you've created, and like it's makes a lot of sense in the same sort of general path of like, well, this is a thing that I have enjoyed listening to, or this is a thing that I've enjoyed watching. And like that's the older that I get and the more that I've been studying my own craft of like figuring out that, so much of it, I think, ferrets back to who you are. As much as you hate the idea that like you have to write what you know, like there is a point where you have to know what it is that you know, and before you can branch out, and you have to know what it is that like interests you. So like, for instance, with the Jim Daly of it all is like, oh, that was a thing that like absolutely interested you, whether or not you were conscious of it, that you then sort of brought into the other aspects of life. And that's a thing that I'm constantly trying, because I am very much not that person that like, I tend to try and not think of my past. Not that anything bad happened. Nothing bad happened. But I, like, you know, always move forward. We're in a very, like, forward-thinking society. Yeah. And so to take the time to sort of exist and be like, oh, why is it that I really, like, I love kidnapping. Man, I love kidnapping. What a, like, as a story concept, it's great. I've been watching a lot of Tailspin, and I'm reminded... Tailspin had so much kidnapping. It was very, very formative in the best way. But I took some time once to be like, well, why? Why do I like kidnapping? What about it like really impacted young Megan? And it was really interesting. And so these are things that like I know whether or not I write kidnapping and things, I can write the like essence of kidnapping. Which
right,
is...
and that kind of tension and conflict that's inherent in that.
Exactly.
Let me ask you something bouncing off of that. So it has been said, perhaps uncharitably and perhaps just accurately, I think jury is still out, that a lot of writers kind of write one story and then spend the rest of their career rewriting that story and kind of just being like, I'm going to keep hammering away at this. And I thought I knew that what I was saying before, but like now I can say it better. And while perhaps a lot of the outer trappings of that thing, of the things that they're doing change, there's kind of this very deep core that seems to just be, they're continually grappling with the same thing over and over and over and over again. Lord knows that now that the three of us have worked on three series at the same time, or three series altogether, rather, one after another, not all three at the same time, we've made very conscious efforts to get away from the things that were in Wolf 359, and they always kind of have a way to smuggle themselves back into our writing.
Favorite thing is, I think, Sarah, I think I texted you after listening to Time Bombs and was like, wait a minute, here are the similarities between this and Wolf 359 that I love, and I'm very excited that they exist here in this space too. But it's true, and I think that, like, it becomes, I've chosen to embrace it because it is a thing where I have the added benefit of writing, being able to write a bunch of spec pilots that maybe five people will read and will not get made, so I don't have to worry about it. Nobody except my writer's group is going to call me out about the fact that I, like, add suicide into a lot of my pilots for an unknown reason. Yeah, it's a thing that I'm still trying to grapple with. Like, I know sort of why I do it, but
if it's all in pilots, no one knows unless you did something foolish, like come on a talk show and mention it.
And then I said it for everybody to know, But still, like, I've sort of chosen to embrace it because it's a thing that I find incredibly telling and fascinating to rather than try different notions, which I also do. But recently I've been like, oh, okay, these are things that I clearly find interesting and I clearly find myself gravitating towards them. Another one that I'll absolutely put myself on blast for, but I don't care, is I love former loves come back is a thing that I really enjoy. And I do this a little bit in Red Rhino in a way that is like not romantic love necessarily, but I love playing with the idea that, like, Wes knows Evangeline, but Evangeline knows Wes, but Wes doesn't know Evangeline. And there's this interesting, like, the tension between the, like, already not yet of a relationship is really fascinating, and to, like, live within that. I don't love a new love is sort of what I've discovered in my own self. I love when there's been a lot of trauma and a lot of, like, stuff between. I find that fascinating, but I also have friends that don't love that and love specifically just, like, the ideal of new love and the ideal of, like, playing out those stories. And so it's
absolutely,
I mean, the more that people find out, to me, the more that other people find out what their story's sensibilities are, I love that more, because then I'm like, oh, I'm ready then. I'm ready for, like, that specific type of story from you, because I know that that is what your jam is.
Right.
I love that.
So what are y'all's, what do you guys think are some of your similar, even either individually or as a group?
Oh, boy. I mean,
well, here, hand over the self-blast phone so that we can kind of do it to ourselves.
Dragging everybody down with me.
No, that's great.
No, I think that anyone that has listened to any of our series, and I think especially Wolf 359 and Zero Hours, although also definitely Time Bombs, if you're kind of paying attention to the right frequencies, there is definitely a, like, recurring thematic worry about if we were made, if we were kind of created, whether it is by an intelligent being or by kind of forces of nature and evolution and progress that are kind of acting upon us, are we kind of defined by that making? Or are we sort of able to go past it? And the moment that we begin to not be the makees, but rather the makers, the moment that we start to create things, whether they are artificial intelligences or worlds that are inhabited, or even kind of younger, more rookie members of our squad that are very, very shaped by our teachings, what does that relationship do, and what does that become, and what are the limits and the abilities and the possibilities of this new thing? And if they surpass our own, is that exciting? Is that scary? Is that fascinating? Is that alarming? I definitely kind of, like, looked up one day while we were doing Zero Hours, and it was kind of like, oh, it's just this arc all over again. Great. Good stuff.
Yeah, I think that's mostly right. And by which I mean entirely right.
I mean, we also love assholes. Don't get us wrong.
Like, just like, love a good asshole.
Just like, love a good asshole.
And I think, like,
what is asshole? I don't understand.
Just isolate that sound clip for me specifically. It's great. Perfect.
Ring tone.
Put it in the mail with your check.
Thank you.
I also think that we sort of, as part of that, have this interest in sort of how much we all need to be in our own heads versus connected to each other. Mm. I see that popping up a lot, and sort of the give and take in making and being made is also played out in sort of how our characters relate to each other.
I mostly focused on asshole. No. I wish I had something to contribute to this. I feel like you've said all the words.
We stole the words away from you. It happens.
The words are good, though. I mean, the thing that I have enjoyed very much from y'all's repertoire has been the sort of study. Like, there's a really a wonderful sense that you're able to do in podcasts that television you're not always able to do. I mean, that's the nature of different forms of media, right? Like, yeah. Books, you're able to do something different than podcasts that are different from television, that are different from movies. And the thing that I love about podcasts that you guys do specifically is that you're able to sort of ask questions and have conversations that are introspective in a way that, like, have movement, but also at the same time have this sense of questioning the space. Like, you're able to sort of exist in the space and question the space and be like, so what is the point of this space?
Uh-huh.
And that may be, you know, actual outer space, or that might be time, or that might be bombs in right. any of the ways. But that was the thing that I was noticing when I was listening to all of it, is there's this general, and once again, this is a thing that I love, because I think that when people are looking for authors that they trust and love and creators that they trust and love, they're looking for people who have ideas that they like. Like, it's not always, I know, like, for instance, I know that I will always like something that Kripke does, like, even if there's things in it that I'm like, oh, maybe this isn't always going to be for me, I know that I will always like, generally speaking, the, like, the questions that he poses and the sense of themes that he does. And so I think that ultimately, even if we're not aware of it, when we're looking for creators to like and follow, we're looking for the questions that they're putting forth in their art.
We're looking for those concerns. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
I love that you think about that in such, like, a very clear, direct way. Because I know that we've definitely had conversations in the privacy of our own lair where we're like, you know, screw theme. Themes comes later. We'll figure that out once we've made it.
Theme's stupid. Themes for book reports.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that makes your work so strong, Megan, to put the blast back on you.
No, I was doing a really good job of avoiding the blast.
No, this is important.
There's a very clear sense of what it's trying to accomplish, and it's always a mission of empathy.
Agreed.
Which I find awesome.
Cool. Not going to cry on this podcast. Shut up.
All right. Shut up.
Thank you.
Engage
that.
Zoom tissue.
We're going to spare you that, because that is, unfortunately, all the time that we have for this episode of No Bad Ideas. Megan, thank you so much for coming on the show, dealing with our bad ideas, giving us one of the most, I think, insightful deep dives into a Creative Corner chat that we've had on the show so far.
Yay. My honor.
If people want to see more of your incisive, really wonderful work, what is the best way for them to do that? Where can that work be found?
Man, I do a dumb podcast called Red Rhino. You can listen to that.
It's pretty awesome. You should check it out.
Thank you. I have an episode of Supernatural that was out last season, and I have another one coming out in September now.
Hell yeah.
Thanks, COVID.
Ooh, COVID.
I do a podcast called Wine and Comics. That's pretty fun. I have a couple of DC Superhero Girls animated shorts. I have that's not been announced. Never mind. College Tapes is coming out in September, and I'm really, really proud of it. It hurts so good in a way that, like, one of our actors was texting me earlier today and was like, this sucks. And I'm like, I know. So I'm very excited about that.
Exactly.
That's all I want to hear.
That sounds really promising.
Man, it hurts so good. And then I did the bonus series for the AM Archives last year, which was also really fun.
That's right. Yes, that was a wonderful little mini series within the mini series.
We had a lot of fun, and it was one of the wildest ideas that I've ever had that I sort of pitched to Lauren and then was like, I'm going to do it anyway. So I really hope that you're okay with it. Bye.
It went to some places.
Yeah.
went to one place. It went to a liminal place. And then was like, oh, I need more characters, or I can make Felix Trench do a lot of voices.
Usually the key to success. Usually the key to success. Making Felix Trench or Zach Valenti do a lot of voices.
Listen, that's all I want now is just Felix and Zach in a room doing a lot of voices. How can we make this happen? Guys.
We're going to put our heads together and figure that one out.
Hang out for a moment after we're done recording. Excellent. And we'll talk further.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll be back at you with more No Bad Ideas next week.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Rena Sarame and Jennifer Schneider. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.